MSW Media.
Hi, I'm Harry Littman, host of Talking Feds, a roundtable that brings together prominent figures from government law and journalism for a dynamic discussion of the most important topics of the day. Each Monday, I'm joined by a slate of Feds favorites and new voices to break down the headlines and give the insider's view of what's going on in Washington and beyond, plus sidebars explaining important legal concepts read by your favorite celebrities. Find Talking Feds wherever you get your podcasts.
The rule of law is not just some lawyer's turn of phrase. It is the very foundation of our democracy. The essence of the rule of law is that like cases are treated alike. That there not be one rule for Democrats and another for Republicans. One rule for the powerful, another for the powerless. One rule for the rich and another for the poor. Or different rules depending upon one's race or ethnicity. To serve as Attorney General at this critical time is a calling I am honored and eager to answer.
So yeah, now it's clean up on aisle 45 time. And for a long while yet, it is going to be clean up on aisle 45.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Clean Up on Aisle 45. This is episode 82. It is Wednesday, August 10th. I am your co-host, Allison Gill, and with me, as always, fresh from the lawyer dungeon beneath my home, is a real-life lawyer, host of Opening Arguments, my friend Andrew Torres. Hello.
Hey, Allison. How are you doing today?
Today is an interesting news day so far. I'm doing okay. Between documents in the toilet and photos of documents in the toilet, and then finding out the lawyers that are representing Donald to the Department of Justice in his discussions for privilege, and finding out that it's nobody new and great. So it's just Corcoran and that other guy. It's fascinating. It's a day.
Well, that is a tremendous preview of what we've got in store for folks, which I think they're really going to love. Our main interview today, and continuing legal incompetence of the bottom tier of the bottom of the barrel of folks who are still willing to take Donald Trump's money and defend him in court. It reminds me, oh my gosh, we had a fantastic live Zoom hangout last Friday. We try and do those once a month, and sometimes we hit the bullseye, sometimes we fall a little bit short, but those are always great for us to hang out with the patrons. And we had a pretty good attendance. We had a lively discussion. And I had opened with and you just see this everywhere from Trump world, right? The idiotic excuse of, well, everybody deserves representation, and the founding fathers, Thomas Jefferson and John Jay, defended, the redcoats who were charged in the Boston Massacre. And it is always, right, monsters defending monsters who use that well-worn trope. Let's be clear. That's a criminal case. It is a founding principle of our nation that you have the right to counsel in criminal cases. Although, it took until 1960 for that to be enshrined as an actual principle that affected poor people in the law. But
I remember that.
Gideon v. Wainwright. There is no civil Gideon. You do not have a right to I would argue, right, in some civil proceedings, you ought to, custody battles, for example. But until there is, you do not have a right to counsel just because you'd like to have a lawyer in a civil lawsuit. And so, all of these chuds that are defending, Donald Trump in civil cases and then falling back on high-minded principles are misusing that principle. You can, if Donald Trump or his minions or whatever came to my office, there is no amount of money they could pay me to take him on as a client.
Yeah, but we're even finding in this in the criminal discussions with Department of Justice, right, that we've got Corcoran, if that's how you pronounce that, Rowley, who represents Navarro, Corcoran,
yep.
Show.
Oh, man.
Like, just still the same. Allow me, if if I may, to quote from Operation Ivy.
Okay.
I know things are getting tougher when you can't get the top off the bottom of the barrel. The wide open road to his future now is looking fucking narrow. thank you. That's Knowledge, Operation Ivy, the only album they put out, one of my favorites. And that is immediately what I thought of when I got that news this morning about his representation with privileged talks with the Department of Justice, and when we had our fantastic discussion with our amazing guest, who is going to appear later today. He is representing Michael Cohen in his First Amendment and among other amendments lawsuit against Trump and several people at the Board of Prisons. That is a good friend of mine, Andy Laufer. We're going to discuss that with him. But before we get to that, Andrew, I want to know who our new patrons are this week.
All right. Well, remember, you can support the show by heading on over to patreon.com/aisle45pod. That is AISLE45POD, and support the show for as little as a buck an episode. We have 13 new patrons this week. Thank you all so much. They are James Ruelas, Beth Bonnet, Anonymice. That's M-E-I-S-S. I like that. Peter in Korea, Kate Rodman, Steve Proper, Michelle Nakamovitz, Victor Aranda, Trope Tweeter, Scott Johnson, Arnolder. That's even more Arnold than Arnold Schwarzenegger. I don't know, Arnolder. Melissa Wiebe and PJ Cormier. Thank you all so much for supporting the show. You get this shout out just by giving us a buck. So if you want to do that, patreon.com/aisle45pod. And you get access to our hangouts, all of the bonus stuff that we do, and you get to say, hey, I'm glad you guys are doing the show and I want to keep it going. So thank you all so much from the bottom of our hearts.
Yes, truly 13. That's I think a record recently. So we appreciate you very, very much. And I don't think we really need to talk about too much other things that are going on right now. I mean, there's been some really interesting filings in the Rudy Giuliani case that he wants to push his hearing back because all of a sudden he's sick, even though he just traveled. And so Fonnie Willis offered to buy him a bus ticket, which I think is amazing. It's just things are starting to get, finally starting to get really interesting for justice. And there's a lot of it. And we're going to cover those stories respectively on Opening Arguments and the Daily Beans, I'm sure. But what is not going to appear this week on either Opening Arguments or the Daily Beans is this really incredible discussion we had with Andy today.
Yeah. And my little rant was part of the setup for that. Remember, this is a civil lawsuit being brought by Michael Cohen. Mm-hmm. And Andy will no doubt lay it all out for us. And I get to ask him a couple of questions about Trump's bottom feeding lawyer, Alina Habba. So I remember she could have said no. So you always have that right as a lawyer when someone comes to you and says, hey, will you, defend me in this obvious case where the only possible defense I have you as a lawyer can be like, think we're going to take a pass on this one, Don, and wish more would do that.
And after, after having this discussion with Andy, I feel like a lot of this is comes down to the law, but also a lot of it comes down to competence or representation. And Michael Cohen is winning when it comes to that. So
Michael Cohen's smart enough to, hire competent outside counsel. So, well, we've teased long enough. What do you say we get to it?
All right. Let's listen to that interview. So this is really exciting, Andrew, because we're right now being joined by another Andrew, civil rights attorney, who is representing Michael Cohen in his First Amendment case. You remember when Donald Trump threw him back in jail after he was out on home detention and he was going to put a book out and Yeah, I don't remember Trump having any kind of a pattern of trying to punish people who were putting out books about him or anything. But the lawyer representing Michael Cohen in that case is with us. It's Andy Laufer. Hi, Andy.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Great. How are you?
Doing well.
So, I mean, why don't we just kind of start at the beginning? Why don't you give a little bit of background about the case, your involvement, sort of where we are right now, and then we'll dive right in.
Sure. So, as we know, Michael Cohen pled to a number of charges against him related to campaign finance in the Southern District, and he was sentenced to a term. And towards the end of that term, he's entitled to what's referred to as home confinement. Now, prior to that, we obviously had a little interruption in all our lives called COVID. So pursuant to this horrendous, viral pandemic that we were going through, incredibly, Bill Barr and Congress passed a bill called the CARES Act, which allowed people in lockup, in federal lockup, who may have comorbidities and may be more susceptible to, more severe effects of COVID to petition their release based upon a health concern and get, served at least a part of their sentence on furlough until things calm down a bit. So he applied for this and he was granted under the CARES Act. There came a time when his furlough was ending and he was supposed to transfer over to home confinement.
Just to clarify. So number one, the CARES Act, the series of acts that were called the CARES Act were the omnibus bills that contained various forms of COVID relief. Number two question, to whom was that application made, right? Who got to determine whether Cohen qualified?
BOP. They would do their own internal review. It wouldn't be any kind of third party, God forbid, outside, medical providers or anything of that nature. It was BOP, and he had some difficulty getting that initially granted, but then he was granted it. They found that because of his comorbidities, he was entitled to a furlough to get out, to get back into his apartment, and hence he was transferred to furlough. There came a point when he was going to transfer over from furlough to official to serve the rest of his sentence under home confinement, and everything was set up the way it's supposed to. They had BOP had an outside or parole probation had an outside company called Geo that would go to his apartment to process all the paperwork and have him sign the agreement that would govern his home confinement. Instead, in the last minute, BOP, some of the named defendants, I think Adam Pakula, who works for parole and probation, and his supervisor, Ernie Phoebus, request that Mr. Cohen come down to the Southern District, which is uncharacteristic, but they're allowed to do things like that to finalize everything with regard to his home confinement. He was then presented with an agreement which was very specific about limiting his First Amendment rights to publish a book, to talk about the administration in a negative context, anything of that nature, political speech, prima facie violation.
Yeah. And let me, and again, just to jump in to educate the listeners.
Sure.
So this is a 2-page document. 7 of the 8 paragraphs look like they're boilerplate to me. And again, I have no familiarity with these. So, but they are, you shall not have any contact with any convicted felons, right?
Like right.
Food shopping and other regular household errands must be conducted on your behalf by your family members, that sort of thing. But paragraph 1 says, as a condition of the release, no engagement of any kind with the media, including print, TV, film, books, or any other form of media/news. Prohibition from all social media platforms. It's still going on. No posting on social media, and a requirement that you communicate with friends and family to exercise discretion in not posting on your behalf or posting any information about you. The purpose is to avoid, give him at least credit for having this last sentence. The purpose is to avoid glamorizing or bringing publicity to your status as a sentenced inmate serving a custodial term in the community. So that's the paragraph to which
you're. Correct.
Yeah, and it reminds me of some singling out that I personally faced when I was working with the Trump administration, where the regular old Hatch Act suddenly turned into Hatch Act plus you can't say bad things about Trump specifically. You can't post bad things about Trump on social media. You can't be posting resist tweets. Like, he got real specific.
Right.
And then, like, I got real specific telework agreements that right. I was supposed to sign that were also curbing my 1A rights.
Sure.
So this sounds super duper familiar to me. Taking a regular old document like the Nice Old Hatch Act and modifying it to your own political benefit.
Exactly. Which is, you know, it flies in the face of what our nation stands for, First Amendment, you know, political speech. I mean, this is an inalienable right. This cannot be taken away from us. We cannot be retaliated against for the lawful exercise. So,
well, let me push that. Let me do a little devil's advocacy here, right? Because one of the I knew, right, kindred spirit, so I knew you'd welcome it. One of the things that we've seen, disturbingly so, right, like if Judge Parker in Michigan made this comment in sanctioning all the Kraken attorneys, right, is misusing the judicial process for political public spectacles, right? And so and in particular then using it to fundraise. So suppose you had a Sidney Powell, right, who was indicted in connection with the 1/6 insurrection. Let's hope that that happens, right? And I could see a Biden Garland DOJ saying, okay, but like the second we let you out, you're going to get back on your computer. You're going to go to Defending the Republic and, you know, you're going to start up some like cockamamie nonsense crowdfunding thing. And you're going to, you know, violate that sort of fundamental tenet of criminal, of the criminal justice system, that people should not come out of the criminal justice system better than when they went into it, you know, more profitable than when they went into it. So I could see an argument that says, yeah, I get it. Nope. Free speech, super important. But like, we know what this person's going to do.
Right.
So how, I guess I would sort of throw that out there, say, number one, you know, should I be kicked out of the country for thinking that that's a valid argument? Or number two, like kind of differentiate that, you know, distinguish from the code.
Yes, we can definitely distinguish that from what is going on with my client. Specifically, you have a lawful process being used for an unlawful purpose. They're going to court and they're abusing the process. It's an abusive process. So their goal is not the free exercise of speech, but to abuse the judicial system, which is why what they're doing is against the law. It's not a speech issue. It's an abusive process issue, the waste of judicial resources, and they should be responsible for that. As opposed to here, where my client, hey, you know, we're just, you know, this is political speech. We're engaging it. I have a constitutional right to engage in it. And now, you know, based upon my client's failure to sign that paragraph, it was already preordained when they were having come down to Southern District that day. exactly.
If you want to finish the history, I'm sorry, I cut you off.
Fine. So essentially, you know, immediately U.S. Marshals come in, the residential reentry coordinator, Pat McFarland, I think he's the main defendant, you know, held him in violation of the home confinement agreement and had him remanded to MDC, you know, federal prison in Brooklyn. And eventually he made his way back to Otisville. Spent 16 days in solitary confinement, horrendous conditions there, no air conditioning, insects, bugs, you name it. It was a disaster. And they knew that he had comorbidities. So now they're putting him back into a situation which could risk his health and even life, potentially. Mm-hmm. So after those 16 days, his criminal defense attorney did a habeas corpus, filed a habeas action before, and Judge Hellestein had it and granted it. And essentially in the colloquy, in the court, testimony, he said he's never seen anything like this in the 20 plus years that he's been sitting on the bench. Client's out. So based upon that, we have two types of lawsuits we're pursuing against the federal government and the individual defense. Under the Federal Tort Claims Act is one aspect, mm-hmm. and the other is Bivens. You want to break those down? More than happy. If you want to ask questions, I'm more than happy.
So Let's start off with the Bivens action, right? Which is
to
grossly oversimplify for our audience is pretty savvy. Essentially, the federal equivalent of a Section 1983 claim for deprivation of your civil rights
under color of federal law.
The Supreme Court has been
horrendous.
Good adjective, right? I mean, they've been skeptical about expanding Bivens since the 90s, and just sort of outright. I think Clarence Thomas wrote the last Bivens decision. So
yes.
It's
Ebert, right?
Yeah, in Ebert, which was a disaster. So
exactly.
All right, so let's start with that.
Okay, so we'll talk about Bivens. Basically, we have three causes of action. We have First, Fourth, and Eighth Amendment. Now, classic Bivens cases are Fourth, Fifth, and Eighth Amendment claims. Fourth, search and seizure.
Right.
The original. Fifth is gender discrimination. And sixth is, cruel and inhuman treatment, related to a serious medical condition, things of that nature. Okay, so what we're asking...
So is that really where you're targeting? I'm sorry.
Fourth and Eighth, we have... I think colorable arguments for him. It was a seizure. He was taken back into custody. Home confinement is not official custody. And there's a string of case law with regard to that, under the Bail Reform Act, which is a Corey case. But there's not a lot post sentence about that. But, home confinement, as far as I'm concerned, is home confinement. That's the argument made to the court. But the real interesting one is we're asking the court to expand Bivens to cover First Amendment retaliation. Now, prior to Abbasi, which was in 2017, and Ebert, which was after we submitted our opposition to the defendant's motions to dismiss, but the judge let us supplement. Basically, expansion of Bivens is frowned upon, unless it's a very unique situation. And that's the argument we're making here. We literally have, based upon the habeas decision, who was named in the habeas was Bill Barr. Carvajal, the former head of BOP, who's still kind of there, and the head of Petrucci, the head of Otisville at the time. Those three have already been found, as a matter of law, to have retaliated against my client for the lawful exercise of his First Amendment rights. So we have them there. We've named, the two probation parole officers, Phoebus Pakula, McFarland, who's their supervisor, and we also have our fun and loving former president, Donald J. Trump, who's a named defendant. I'm getting really technical here, but the standard that we have to really meet is under the Iqbal, it's got to be plausible. Iqbal, Twombly, and all that fun stuff where our conservative justices say, because we're not a notice pleading, we're a fact-based pleading statute in federal court, not notice, okay, like we are in New York State. So you have to really get into the nitty-gritty of all the facts and cause you relate everything, meaning, demonstrate that each individual defendant did something in furtherance to my client's deprivation of his rights, okay? Given what we have here in terms of what Trump did, well, given his history of retaliating against people, I don't think Allison knows anything about that. Maybe she does.
If you need any pattern or practice, if you want Eddie to add on to the pile
can bring Trump's way.
Totality of evidence, you just let me know.
No problem. So we went through those oral arguments.
So they moved to dismiss. Did they move to dismiss the entire complaint or just the Bivens cause of action?
They moved to dismiss. We only had Bivens against Trump, which HABA is representing Trump on, and DOJ is representing everyone else from Bivens and FTCA. So they moved to dismiss everything.
Okay.
And they threw everything in the kitchen sink.
Sure.
At that. So and we've addressed each one of their arguments, and I think 99.9% of their arguments do not hold.
And that's been briefed, argued, and is pending.
Right. We're waiting for a decision. We orally argued it back on August 2nd. And I think things went pretty well. I really feel that.
You mean last week, August 2nd?
Last week, yeah.
I clarify that because as I have said on my show, I practice frequently in federal court, and I have gone, you know, particularly for civil cases, more than a year.
Oh yeah, August 2nd last year wouldn't be unheard of.
Yeah, right. For for awaiting a ruling on a complex motion
to
dismiss.
We're still awaiting rulings on Mary Trump's case, for example. It's been quite a while.
The courts are ridiculously overloaded. We could double the size of the federal judiciary and not put a big dent in the backlog. So,
yeah, I mean,
anyway.
Clearly, I wholeheartedly agree. I certainly waited my fair time and, you know, waiting for decisions on various cases in federal court. So this one's a little, you know, obviously a little bit more high profile. That may encourage a quicker determination. The judge sitting on the case, Judge Lewis Lyman, he's great. He gave both sides ample opportunity to kind of flesh out all the arguments, and he posed some really good hypotheticals and having us deal with that. And, you know,
and this is Southern District of New York,
Southern District of New York. That's correct.
Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully we'll have some luck and we'll get a good determination. I mean, it would really be great because, you know, the biggest thing is, you know, uniqueness. That's what Justice Thomas talks about in Big Bird, you know, and that they say that in obesity and all these other, that is, you know, expanding Bivens. You need to show a really unique situation. And I think what we have here is a very unique situation. We had the personal attorney to the president of the United States who had over a decade of a close working relationship with him, who knows all the nitty gritty about Trump being retaliated against for not, you know, for the lawful exercise of First Amendment rights, being thrown in prison. You don't really get much worse than that, other than death, being summarily executed on Fifth Avenue because Trump.
It's almost like, what would you have to do to expand Bivens?
Don't put that question to Clarence Thomas.
But you know what I mean? Like, it's like when we ask about what happened on January 6th. If this isn't seditious conspiracy, then nothing is, right? I have a feeling like that.
It's exactly like that. And what SCOTUS, our originalists on the bench, want to see is an act of Congress. You know, some of the arguments that Trump's attorney was making, which I found incredulous, were things like my client, you know, has an alternate remedies, you know, and FTCA and Bivens, you know, in the commentary, they're supposed to work together. They're not ultimate remedies of themselves. But putting that aside, she suggested, oh, you could petition Congress to impeach the president. So every time someone is retaliated against by the president of the United States, we should rally Congress to impeach and remove them. Because that's worked very well throughout the history of the Republic. You know, this individual, you know, is supposed to do that. And it's just crazy. You know, this, you have to check. This is, you know, and they tried to rationalize that somehow retaliating against a perceived political foe is within the outer perimeter of, you know, of presidential authority. And I cannot understand that argument. It's just crazy. It's crazy. So sketch
really quickly the FTCA claim, just so that we kind of bring it all up to speed. And then I want to ask you about DOJ, and I want to ask you about litigating against Alina Habba, which is interesting. But FTCA.
FTCA. Go. Okay. So what the FTCA is an act that was passed by Congress, which essentially waives the United States sovereign immunity with regard to negligence cases and intentional torts and things like that. So we have, you know, you have to follow a certain statutory requirement before filing your lawsuit, filing an SF-95, you know, like a notice of claim outlining what your allegations are, what types of causes of action you're going to be pursuing. You're basically applying state law to federal actors. And this gives us an avenue to do that, FTCA.
Right.
But, you know, you can't name individual actors. You have to just sue the United States. So we have false arrest, imprisonment, I have a piece of process. You know, intentional negligent infliction of emotional distress. I think those are the primary ones. There's a couple of others. We have some negligence claims, which we'll see what happens with those.
And are there related? I mean, I would think that the core question, right? Obviously, it's a very unique situation, but I would think the core question of revoking someone's right to home detention is, and whether that sufficiently counts as false imprisonment or IIED or whatever, that there would probably be some case law on that.
Right. I mean, we found, you know, going into the 1983 realm, you know, retaliatory, you know, transfer of someone to another prison.
It
is actionable. Okay. Under 1983.
Okay.
So you can kind of make you know, equivalent arguments there.
That seems fair.
Yeah. You know, you know, the thing is just, will the court expand the First Amendment in this case? You know, I think it's got to be a really narrowly defined reasoning for that, and that the facts surrounding this this case are so unique and outlandish that it has to be addressed, that this is a necessity to address such abuse of power where someone was incarcerated. Now, the big argument that DOJ is having with me on that is that home confinement, they're claiming that it's official custody, and it's not. Under the under the pretrial detention rulings,
I was going to ask you about that, because if the DOJ sees home confinement as custody, right?
Yeah.
Detainment. But then because, like, I feel like they can't have it both ways. I feel they can't call it a prison and then not say we're taking you from your really nice home confinement prison to this really shitty prison for no reason.
Right. They can't use it as a sword and a shield, as we love, in the parlance we love to say in the legal world. You know, what they're doing here, they've successfully argued time and time again, and there's a tremendous amount of case law that they've worked up where they say home confinement is not official custody under the Bail Reform Act, under any act, under any situation. You know, for pretrial detainees, because pretrial detainees a number of times try to get home detention credited to their sentences, and they can't, and they can't because it's not official custody. So now they're saying, oh, but it is official custody. So we're allowed to just transfer them anywhere we want, you know?
That was where my brain first went, was when I was like, well, how can they argue one and not the other? That's immediately where I went.
Exactly. Spot on. And you know, he can have like a gin and tonic, you know, in his house or whatever. And all of a sudden we're going to have federal marshals come in just to arrest them because they feel like transferring back to prison. It's not how it works. You know, and we have, on top of all that, we have Judge Hellerstein from the Southern District on the habeas petition stating that the defendants violated Mr. Cohen's First Amendment rights for the lawful exercise of his political speech.
I remember
You know, we just have that order. So it's not a he said, she said. Much more difficult if I had to deal with that. The court would probably not expand First Amendment. Mm-hmm. And it would be difficult for me to get Fourth and Eighth there as well. Here, we've got a ruling. And I think that's going to get us past at least the motion to dismiss stage into discovery. I really feel that, you know, we will get
like into the discovery. Judge would say, we're going to need to let the jury decide on this.
Well, not necessarily the jury, because they'll get a second bite at it, but yes. And just to clarify, under the FTCA, we don't get a jury, so it would be a bifurcated trial. Under Bivens, we do get a jury trial. So,
And I asked that because, and Andrew, you know where I'm going to go with this, because in the Sussman case where we were like, this is obviously a bullshit, you know, charge, but the judge was like, yeah, you're full of shit, but we're going to let a jury tell you you're full of shit. So that's sort of where I was kind of basing that.
No, definitely. That's good.
It occurs to me, and curious your thought process here, that if you survive the motion to dismiss, right, then the equities at DOJ probably shift in favor of them sitting down with you to reach a settlement, right? Yeah. Like, in other words, I can understand why the DOJ would want to defend, whether we agree with it or not, that principle of home confinement counts as custody. But once a court has said, well, I'm open to the idea that maybe it isn't, right? Mm-hmm. Then they're strongly incentivized not to have an official ruling on the merits by a court that says, yes, indeed.
Yeah.
You know, it's the opposite. And so leave it as an unsettled question, you know, settle with you and your client, get out, and then, you know,
it'd be
kick the can down the road.
It'd be prudent for them to do that. I mean, personally, I think they should have reached out to Mr. Cohen beforehand, before I got involved, but you know how that works. I mean,
I have to know.
I was going to say, we only have a couple minutes left before Torres has to leave, and you want to know.
Practicing attorney? I sometimes make intemperate remarks in public. It seems to me that Alina Haba is truly stupid. What's it like litigating against her? You don't have to accept my characterization in any way whatsoever, but
I was going to say we only have a couple minutes left before Torres has to get out of here, and he really wants
this
to
is
know
this
that.
Is why I wanted you on the show, man. Dish.
We're getting to the
Alina Haba.
Meat of it. She's, you know, she is, I'll just say this. She's not knowledgeable about the law in this area.
in this area.
Was apparent in oral argument. And she also, what I observed was she got a little contentious with the judge, which is something
that's always a good idea,
which is something you generally want to avoid over hypotheticals. Yeah. So, you know, there's that.
And I should interject and say that the rules of professional conduct allow me to say whatever I want as, you know, kind of commenting here, but require Andy to be somewhat circumspect regarding opposing counsel here. So I've put you in a tough spot, and I appreciate that. So we can go to story. That is just such a terrible, terrible strategy to start picking a fight with the judge.
But. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a strategy, I suppose.
Mm. We've seen it. We've seen it a bunch.
Yeah.
With the team Kraken Strike Force, whatever.
Yeah, effects, horrible. So. I mean, it's just a grift. That is a grift. And that is just an abusive process. And those attorneys that willingly involve themselves and sign affirmations before the court, made representations before the court, should lose their bar license or be suspended if they don't have a jaded history. You know, I just think it's really... I hope the court, and I think they have so far, really, really, really stops that type of activity down to the ground. Crushes.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
Well, this has been super fascinating because, you know, these two different things to weigh, and if you have one, you can't have the other. And so it's been really, really interesting going through this, and I hope you'll keep in touch with us about what comes next.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, civil rights attorney representing Michael Cohen, Andy Laufer. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys.
Well, I just can't thank Andy enough for coming in and talking to us today. It was interesting to talk to be surrounded by Andrew lawyers, but it was a great discussion. And, you know, like I said, immediately when he talked about those two provisions, about one where the DOJ or, you know, where the defense says, oh, it's, you know, home confinement is definitely a prison. And, oh, no, it's also not. I'm like, look, I feel like you can't have it both ways. So this is a very, very well presented, well thought out case by Andy Laufer and his team.
Yeah. And look, that's part of what good lawyers do, right? Is look for the position that your party opponent is taking in the present litigation and then figure out, is there a reason why they would want to be on the opposite side? Well, yeah, there's a good reason why DOJ would want to be on the opposite side of declaring home confinement to be custodial when you're talking about, you know, good time credits and the like, right? And so,
yeah, and especially in the, you know, with the concept of there being plenty of precedent of transferring people to shittier prisons as punishment.
Yep. So I thought that was fascinating. I think he's great. And I'm always appreciative whenever we can, you know, push other practicing lawyers up to the same line that I'm at. So so thanks, Andy, for coming on. And thanks to all of you for being here and listening. We hope you enjoyed the show.
Yeah, everybody, we'll be back next week, of course. And I'll be in D.C. this weekend doing some stuff, which should be pretty fun. And maybe we'll have a little meet and greet there. I'll send out some info if you're a patron or a supercaster to both Cleanup and the Daily Beans stuff. And please tune in to Opening Arguments in the Daily Beans this week. And it's going to be, I'm interested to know what we could possibly even have in front of us to talk about next week. Alex Jones text messages, which are now in the hands of the January 6th committee. It's going to get really interesting, really fast. And we're so glad you're here. And we're very happy that we can present it to you. So until next time, I'm Allison Gill.
And I'm Andrew Torres.
And this has been Cleanup on Aisle 45. Cleanup on Aisle 45 is written, researched, and produced by Allison Gill and Andrew Torres, with editing by Molly Hockey. Our art and logo designer by Joelle Reeder and Moxie Design Studios, and our music is composed and performed by Adam Orr. Cleanup on Aisle 45 is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, visit mswmedia.com. MSW Media. We'll be right back.
Season 4 of How We Win is here.
For the past 4 years, we've been making history in critical elections all over the country. And last year, we made history again by expanding our majority in the Senate, beating election-denying Republicans in crucial state House races, and fighting back a non-existent red wave.
But the MAGA Republicans who plotted and pardoned the attempted overthrow of our government now control the House, thanks to gerrymandered maps and repressive anti-voter laws. And the chaotic spectacle we've already seen shows us just how far they will go to seize power, dismantle our government, and take away our freedoms.
So the official podcast of The Persistence is back with Season 4. There's so much more important work ahead of us to fight for equity, justice, and our very democracy itself. We'll take you behind the lines and inside the rooms where it happens with strategy and inspiration from progressive changemakers all over the country.
And we'll dig deep into the weekly news that matters most and what you can do about it with messaging and communications expert, co-founder of Way to Win, and our new co-host, Jennifer Fernandez Ancona.
So join Steve and I every Wednesday for your weekly dose of inspiration, action, and hope.
I'm Steve Pearson.
And I'm Jennifer Fernandez Ancona.
And this is How We Win.